Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. This show is for the week of August 2nd, 2016. That's August, because it's so hot here. I'm getting my months mixed up. Anyway, today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Well, it is hot here in Boston area in this early August period. So, DR, a couple of weeks ago, we had an interesting discussion, basically following the events in Baton Rouge and Dallas and Minneapolis-St. Paul area. There was some discussion about the way people saw issues in our country as being totally different and not in any way overlapping. And mm-hmm. we discussed a story by a guy named Andrew O'Hare, who talked about a civil war, of course, of world views. I mean, just mm-hmm. totally different ways of approaching. And, of course, that kind of thing has relevance for climate hawks, because it seems as if the people that we are trying to convince sometimes have a completely unrealistic, or what apparently would be an unrealistic worldview that is just not compatible with what most climate hawks think. Mm-hmm. So then I got off on my high horse talking about epistemological bubbles and how you need to stay open to new information, and that was the best defense mm-hmm. against getting caught in the same kind of bubble that the other guys are in. So that's all prologue for the following fact. I think, and have for a long time, been sort of philosophically, I think I still am, but philosophically opposed to the use of genetically modified organisms for food, okay? Mm-hmm. No GMO food. And it just seemed like it was a bad idea. But this past week, there was a letter signed by something like 107 or 109 Nobel Prize winners urging the Environmental Defense Fund, I think, or Greenpeace, one of those mm-hmm. two organizations.
Yep, Greenpeace.
Greenpeace, to stop its opposition to a GMO strain of rice called golden rice. And mm-hmm. the Nobel Prize man said that the rice is perfectly safe to eat, and it has, I think it's beta carotene in it, which helps prevent blindness in small children in the third world. That vitamin mm-hmm. is a vital thing. And it got me thinking that among people who believe in sustainability, climate hawks and whatnot, could it be that there are some topics that are badges to identify your allegiance to the tribe, mm-hmm. right? That you have to sign up for GMO, to oppose GMO food, even in the face of the fact that 100 Nobel Prize winners say it's safe. Mm-hmm. And I, on this show, talk all the time about how we have to accept the science. Right? But here is 109, as I say, Nobel Prize winners have some moral authority in science. Mm-hmm. I mean, should they be listening? Is it okay to eat GMO food? And the bigger question is not so much the GMO food thing, but have I blinded myself to facts because mm-hmm. of a preconceived worldview that I had not questioned? Mm-hmm. So tell me, DR, talk me back off the cliff.
it's a fascinating question because, you know, when I look at this list of Nobel laureates, and many, you know, they have Nobel laureates in physics and chemistry and medicine, and you do have to wonder that the obvious question of how many have studied this, or how many are, you know, going off what they perceive to be an assumption by Greenpeace, that Greenpeace doesn't really know what it's talking about or what have you. Mm-hmm. It's one of the, you know, it's the old appeal to authority thing, and who is a real authority and who is not. And, you know, just because somebody has a Nobel laureate, does that necessarily mean they're experts in terms of the issue of GMOs? And it gets to the level of, people who would say in response to this letter that, you know, yes, we respect your opinion, but we don't want what they call Frankenfood. So it goes to the issue of whether or not this is, in fact, a sort of orthodoxy among certain people, or whether or not it's a legitimate point of concern.
But isn't that exactly the argument made by the climate deniers,
mm-hmm.
that all climate scientists are just in it to make money, right? They got to keep the grant alive.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's important to question this stuff, because if you see it in yourself, if you see these tendencies in yourself, when mm-hmm. you look at the other guy, he hasn't recognized it yet. He's still inside the bubble. It mm-hmm. gives you some kind of advantage to crack the opposite viewpoint and make your case.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it seems to me there's a fairly strong mirror image there for, you know, sort of conservative types who believe in the NRA and they believe in opposing climate change, because that signifies that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people in the sustainability side oppose nuclear power,
mm-hmm.
right? A lot of scientists say nuclear power is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not one of them. I tend to agree with you, but I think it's a legitimate thing where you have to ask yourself, you know, am I kidding myself about these issues and just signing up because I haven't taken the time to do all the research?
Mm-hmm. It is a fascinating thing as to whether or not, you know, there is a bit of groupthink developing, but as I say, both with regard to GMOs, sometimes groupthink is good. Sometimes groupthink works, and I'll give you an example. Look at how just a few years ago there was this consensus, if you will, that fracked gas was the best thing to help us avoid, you know, the worst impacts of climate change. And then some courageous scientists like Anthony Ingraffia raised some questions and said, hey, wait a minute, this isn't as copacetic as we might think. And now the consensus is the reverse. Now there's a general recognition that fracked gas is not all that it's fracked up to be. So again, and it just goes to show you, you know, sometimes the groupthink position is the correct position.
Well, I mean, you said it's fascinating. It is in the following sense that, you know, whether you, no matter which political party you subscribe to, right, whichever mm-hmm. one you like, doesn't matter. Part of the virtue of that party is that you have identified with them as having reasonably the same philosophical impulses.
Mm-hmm.
So when that organization passes judgment on some policy,
mm-hmm.
even if you haven't studied it, you can say, well, okay, I agree with, you know, whatever it is. I mean, if on the Democratic side, I mean, who knows? $15 minimum wage, yep, I agree with that, even though mm-hmm. I have not studied it. And so there is virtue. I mean, groupthink is a pejorative, right? But there is mm-hmm. virtue in being part of a hive, shall we say, that mm-hmm. thinks about things in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side is that the hive can get things wrong, too. I mean, mm-hmm. I was thinking through that. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when microwaves were exotic.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't around. And there were people saying, oh, the microwave energy will create cancer-causing chemicals in the hamburger you're frying.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Turned out they were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Cell phones. People have worried about cell phones as creating a cancer-causing thing. I think at this point it's pretty clear they don't, because mm-hmm. there's billions of people with cell phones, you know. I mean, the major mm-hmm. health risk of a cell phone is texting while driving, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then the flip side is that, for example, with nuclear radiation, back in the 1890s, they thought nuclear radiation was a good thing. You went mm-hmm. to the spa to sit in a pool of water with radium in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out in that case, they were very wrong again.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's good sides and bad sides. My own feeling is that with GMO and also with something called nanotechnology, I mean, that this idea, the sustainability idea of the precautionary principle, where you don't take action until you've really thought through all of the consequences. I mean, GMO food, it seems like it puts the seed supply, right? These GMO seeds don't reproduce, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing grows the second year. You have to buy more seed. Mm-hmm. That's quite a dangerous thing to play with.
Exactly. Right?
And I think with the nanotechnology, we talked in shows a while ago about how these little tiny beads, nano beads in the cosmetics, you know, after you wash it off your face, it goes into the river and the fish eat it. Mm-hmm. Right? And the fish die from the, I mean, nanotechnology is stuff that is not found in nature. And we have no idea what consequence there is. So at some level, the precautionary principle tells you to go very, very carefully. But on mm-hmm. the other hand, you can't stop all progress. You can't not move forward.
Exactly.
I don't know. I'm stuck.
It depends on the nature of progress and what is considered progress. You know, New Coke was considered progress, and look what happened there.
Yeah, it's and a lot of this stuff is going to be very hard to stop. And I'm not picking on GMO in particular, right? Genetically modified organisms. I mean, mm-hmm. I am not particularly crazy about eating anything made out of GMO, but on the other hand, maybe it's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a strange world, but I just the ultimate point of what I have been thinking about is that to question your beliefs in this way, especially as a climate hawk, is to mm-hmm. keep your mind open to what might be a surprise, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to get surprised by something that you thought was true and turned out not to be true.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go. Am I right? Am I wrong?
You have a very good point that always.
But
always
you don't agree with it, do you?
Always try to keep a curious mind. I just get the sense that you know you want the food to be real. is this food real or is it memory?
Yes, well, I'm with you on that. Anybody out there who has reasons to oppose GMO food, let us know, or if you think it's the greatest thing going, let us know what the argument are. But actually, as I say, it's the bigger question of why do you think what you think.
As I think about this discussion, I'm reminded of that great line from the movie The Matrix. I know it's not meat, but it tastes so good.
Oh God! All right, we will leave it there, DR. We'll try and put up. I don't think there's many. We'll put up the link to the 109 scientists. But for people to consider, but there you go. That'll be at our blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. Please let us know what you think about our philosophical and epistemological bubbles here. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. You can find this at iTunes. And so let me say this. We'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Inside the bubble. Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.